The following audio is brought to you by Summerside Community Church in London, Ontario. For more information on Summerside, visit us online at www.summersidechurch.ca.
But welcome. My name's Devin. So glad that you are here with us. And I want to start off with a question. And kids, I need your input. And then after kids, we'll go to the adults. So here's a question, kids. What is your favorite food? A block of cheese? Pumpkin cheese? Mac and cheese. Good. Okay, somebody else, yell it out. Tacos. Good.
Pizza.
Come on, somebody's just bursting to tell me. Okay, what about back here? You guys got anything for me, kids? What's your favorite food? Burgers. Okay. Parents, give me one. And you don't have to impress other people with your selection here, right? Let's just be honest. What is your favorite food? Hot wings. Are you guys thinking wings night? Sushi? Yeah, I'd have to say it would be sushi for me. Thai food, I really like the spices and the dishes, and I'm still a sucker for a great big, well-cooked, not cooked well, or cooked well steak, kind of medium, if that makes sense. You know, what's fascinating, since we're talking about food, is how often the Bible mentions food. I mean, you think about it, even in the beginning pages of the Bible, Adam and Eve are tempted by the devil, by the serpent, with what? A piece of food, right? You think about the stories of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so many of the narratives, the stories of those people, take place around a meal or around food. God provides manna in the wilderness and quail for the nation of Israel as they're wandering. Israel has a number of feasts and significant holidays that involve food. When you get to the New Testament, you see that Jesus was tempted by the devil with food. Turn these stones into bread, you know, kind of prove yourself. Jesus' miracles incorporated food. You think about feeding of the 5,000 and so forth. His first miracle takes place around a feast. It comes up a number of times in the Bible. In fact, you could be pretty happy, I'm willing to bet, if you ate exclusively what is mentioned in the Bible. No, I'm not advocating like one of those like fad diets is the Bible diet, you know, the Daniel diet, those kinds of things. Like, I'm not at all saying that. I'm simply saying that the Bible mentions by name a whack of foods. The Bible talks about apples, almonds, dates, figs, grapes, olives, melons, nuts, pomegranates, raisins, beans, cucumbers, gourds, onion, leeks, 8 different types of grain, fish, fowl, venison, sheep, goat, beef, butter, milk, cheese, eggs, honey, oil, and vinegar, good wines and cheap wines, the spices, coriander, cinnamon, cumin, dill, garlic, mint, mustard, rue, and salt. The Bible talks about food a lot, and that's about half. The rest of them I didn't really know how to prepare, how to pronounce without looking them up. And they didn't sound that appealing anyway. So there you go. But what's fascinating is that, you know, for those of us who call ourselves Christians who would say, Jesus is my Lord and my everything, there is to be no division in our minds between what is God's and what is mine. This is God's domain. This is my domain. God controls this over here, but I control this over here. And for many people outside of Christianity who look in on it, think that Christians give God Sunday mornings, believe a few things, and then go on with their lives from there. But the Bible presents a very different picture where everything that we do, everything that we are, everything that we involve ourselves with is an opportunity to bring God glory. And so today we're going to talk about food and how food can bring God glory. You see, in 1 Corinthians 10:31, the Apostle Paul says this: whatever you do, whether you eat or you drink, do it for the glory of God. Do it all for the glory of God. Right? There's no separation between what is God's and what is mine. And God cares about our habits around food. So let's talk that through. You see, the Bible has a lot to say about both feasting and fasting. You can feast for the glory of God, and you can fast for the glory of God. So let's jump in and talk about these two areas and see how our habits around these areas can help us grow. Okay? Here we go. Feasting for the glory of God. Feasting for the glory of God. Now, feasting is part of the Christian life. And by feasting, I mean enjoying God's good gifts, of being thankful, and of recognizing that God's grace is found in so many different areas that we're often blind to. But it means recognizing that even what we eat is a gift from God. And I would define feasting for God's glory in this way. Feasting for the glory of God means being grateful and being gathered. Being grateful and being gathered. Or being thankful and being together. There's two aspects to what I'm talking about here. And we're going to talk that through. You see, Jesus, interestingly enough, feasted really, really well. Right? I mean, think about it. Jesus shows up on the scene, the Son of God, steps into human history, is born of a virgin. He grows up and he begins his public ministry. And what does he do? Well, he doesn't go around starting off programs and initiatives. Right? What does he do? The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, it says in Matthew 11:19. I mean, think about that. Of all the ways that Jesus could have chosen to represent his calling and his mission, this is one that he chose. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking. Jesus loved to feast. Jesus loved to party. So much so that his enemies, the religious leaders of the day, or the Pharisees, called him a glutton and a drunkard. And a friend of sinners, those naughty people that you just shouldn't associate with. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking. He came feasting. He was called, wrongly so, a glutton and a drunkard. You know, it's been said that in the Gospels, Jesus is either at a meal, going to a meal, or coming from a meal. It is fascinating. When I read that, when I heard that, and then I read through one of the Gospels, it just struck me anew of how often Jesus is there around a table. Jesus feasted well. In fact, his first miracle, the declaration that he is Israel's Messiah, the King of Kings, come into human history, that he is the Anointed One, is allowing a party, a wedding party, to continue. Jesus feasted really well. Now, you can also see from Jesus' ministry that he is both thankful and he's together. That he is grateful and that he is gathered. Because he eats with people. He invites people in. He expands the table of who, the realm of who is invited to come to the table, of those who are welcomed. Now let's be clear here, okay? We're not talking about gluttony. When we say feast for the glory of God, it's not a matter of like, all right, you know, let's just eat the worst junk we can and the most junk we possibly can in a short time, right? Because after all, you know, it's all for God's glory. No. Gluttony is a real risk in our world today. Right? We live in a society in which calories are available for very, very cheap. You know, it is a unique temptation for those of us in the West. Historically, I mean, think about it. If you were a peasant in the year 1115, and everybody you knew was a peasant, and all you had was like a little morsel of bread, I mean, yeah, you can be not thankful. You can not glorify God with that. But it's going to be hard to be a huge glutton and always feasting and getting gout all the time and everything like that, right? It's going to be difficult because they just didn't have access to it. We do today, and so we need to be on guard for this. Now, gluttony is not just the enjoyment of food, not just eating. It's not, you know, eating food fast or eating food without praying or eating a specific type of food, okay? I'm not saying that going to the Mandarin is wrong. Right? Isn't this funny? A couple months ago, before COVID, I was out with, we were traveling somewhere and we saw the Mandarin and I was famished. I was like, okay, we're going to go. And so I'm there. When I'm there, I tend to eat a ton of protein and lots of green stuff. I just love that combination. So I'm sitting there and I'm explaining to the kids how this is going to go. And I'm thinking, I'm eating literally whatever I want here. I want my kids to experience just a little bit of freedom instead of mom and dad controlling everything. So I said to them, I was like, you know what? You can eat whatever you want. And I mean that. And I was like, Heather, we're not going to be like, oh, let's get a little bit less of that, a little bit more of this. I was like, if you want to eat nothing but cookies, just go for it. And I was almost like an experiment. I wanted to kind of sit back and see how this all unrolled. And, you know, so they didn't do too bad. But my kids, for some reason, now think that the Mandarin is like the epitome of fanciness. We were talking about manners and elbows, and one of them's like, oh, you couldn't do that at the Mandarin. I was like, you could get away with a lot at the Mandarin. But so I'm not saying that a buffet is inherently gluttonous. What I am talking about is what's going on in the heart, okay? So gluttony is the excessive indulgence in food or drink with zero recognition that it comes from God, with zero thankfulness, with zero enjoyment. You know, C.S. Lewis, I forget in what book, I should have researched this, it just popped into my head. But C.S. Lewis talks about that the sad part of alcoholism is that it's removed the ability to even enjoy alcohol. Because it's no longer about, oh, that really does taste good. You know, it's about, I got to get more, I got to get more, I got to get more, I got to get more. Until I'm drunk. So you're not actually enjoying it. It's the same for food. Right? If you're not enjoying it, savoring it, thinking about it, you know, be very cautious about gluttony. And gluttony is that excess. The book of Proverbs talks a ton about gluttony, surprisingly so. And in Proverbs 23:21, we read this: the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and slumber will clothe them with rags. Gluttony is a problem. And feasting doesn't mean that you just gorge yourself, but it means slowing down to enjoy, to think through what it is that you're consuming, to be grateful for it, to appreciate it, and to do that with others. So feasting for God's glory involves that gratefulness and being gathered. So let's talk about that. You know, when you're there and you have either prepared a dinner party or you have people into your home, or you go out for a wings night and you're laughing and you're telling stories and you're sharing, that provides so much opportunity to be thankful, not just for the food that God has actually provided, right? That is important. But even more than that, that God in his infinite grace and mercy has chosen to create us with the capacity to enjoy these things. God could have made this really common plant, the gruel plant, and it just spits out this brown stuff. It's nutritional, but it's disgusting, but that's all the humans can enjoy. And so every day we go out and we gather our gruel plant and we eat that. God could have created us that way. But what does he do instead? He allows us to enjoy it, to enjoy food, to appreciate it. Scent, presentation, colors, the texture, the flavor, savory and salty. God has created us with the capacity to enjoy his creation. And when we fail to enjoy food and to be thankful for it, we're dulling our senses to God's involvement even in our lives. Be thankful that God has given us the ability to enjoy and to appreciate not just the food, but the fun, the laughter, the joy that goes along with that. You know, this means, I think, at least in part, praying before your meals. Not, I was going to say not religiously. That's kind of that would be a weird expression in a church context. But, you know, pray before your meals. That's important, right? Don't snap at somebody if they don't. God knows your heart and God knows your thankfulness. But if you do choose to pray as a family or as a couple before your meal, Slow down a little bit when you're praying. Offering God's just a stock, memorized template prayer. You know, God knows your heart, and if that's how you feel comfortable praying, that's fine. But take some time and really think about your words and genuinely push your heart to be thankful in that moment. And here's a side note. You know, if you've got kids, if you have a family, keep the table sacred. Right? Put the phone down. Put the devices down. Turn the TV off, the radio off, whatever it is that tempts you. You know, find some time that you can really be together as a family. I remember as a kid growing up, some of my fondest memories involved the kitchen table and just laughing and telling stories and inviting my parents into my world at school and sharing with them the stories and the people. You know, keep that sacred. I was out with Heather last week for a bite to eat. And I'm sitting there and I'm facing this guy. I think it was like either a granddad or a dad and his daughter. And the daughter's like 12 years old or something, right? Just kind of stepping into, you know, teenage years and grown up. And I'm watching and she's talking to him. And she's not pulling this like, oh, I'm still a teenager and I don't like you. She's really trying to share with him. And she's engaged with him. And she's telling him a story and kind of laughing. And dude is sitting there on his phone just scrolling and being like, Like, and it broke my heart. I just wanted to give him a slap. To be like, you're missing this beautiful opportunity to be there around a meal with your daughter or your granddaughter, and you're squandering it. And pretty soon she's going to grow up, and she's going to get busy, and she's going to move on, and those opportunities are going to be gone, and you're going to have lost some of these opportunities. So keep the table sacred. Even if you're just a couple, or even if you're alone, and you're eating meals alone, don't just eat them in front of the TV. Take some time to pause and allow it to be a spiritual exercise in some way. So feasting for God's glory means being grateful. That's the heart. And as often as you can, being together, of enjoying it together, of celebrating it together. That's the fun part. Throw a dinner party. You're like, oh, I can do that. Good. Not during COVID because, you know, if your last name starts with K to Z, you can't go out in groups of more than four unless it's the alternating Tuesday of a leap year, and then you can, but you need special permission. Right? I know it's complicated, but we'll get out of this, and when dinner parties start flowing again, put some love into them, get them going, open your home, and let's do it. That's the fun part. Now let's talk about fasting. Fasting. You're like, feasting, that sounds good. I can do that. Good spiritual habit that will help me grow. But let's talk about fasting. You see, we feast for God's glory and we fast for God's glory. Fasting is the voluntary act of saying no to food, to say yes to God. It's a season of saying no to the physical, to say yes in some measure to the spiritual. And the purpose of a time or a season of fasting is to be reminded of our utter dependence on God. You think you're dependent on food? We are so much more dependent on God for everything. Now, Jesus expects his followers to fast. Let me read for you Matthew 6, 16 to 18. Jesus said this. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Or they just hashtag fasting, hashtag spiritual life it, right? Truly I tell you, they have received their reward in full. Jesus says, first of all, you know, when you fast. So apparently there's an expectation that those who call themselves Christians fast in some degree of regularity. That fasting is just a part of what it means to be a follower of Christ. It is a tool that God has given to his followers to discern his will, to know him better, to enjoy him, to mourn. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. It is this tool or this weapon that God has given to his children that we often don't talk about in our kind of evangelical world for some reason. But Jesus says right here, when you fast. And then he gets into the how. You don't fast for street cred. You don't fast to impress me. I don't fast to impress you. You don't drag yourself into church and be like, oh, I'm so tired. Everything, oh, don't mind me. I'm just fasting to get close to the Lord, and you wouldn't understand. It's just, it's hard. It's been how many days now? And, you know, act it up and so you can get some kind of applause. You don't do it that way. Right? There's nothing wrong with inviting other people into that, to inviting some accountability or doing it with a group, but be very cautious. It is not a way to level up your spirituality over top of other people. And fasting is not something that God has given to his followers who really want to hit level 33 as a Christian. Right? Really hit you know, the top level. No, it's a gift that he's given to all of his believers and one that he expects us to use. Fasting, according to the Bible, can be done to express repentance. That's in the book of Nehemiah. To mourn, 1 Samuel 31. To seek God's will and his favor, Acts 13:2. There are many reasons that you can choose to fast. And I would assume that if we went around this room, many of us would have life circumstances, relationships, health struggles, people in our lives that are hurting, that fasting would be a good option. You know, the purpose of fasting is not to punish our body. There is nothing in the Bible, in Christianity, that says that the body is bad, the spirit is good. So you punish the body because, you know, you want to protect or somehow develop the spirit. No, our bodies are good. They are created by God. We live in a fallen world, sure. But being hungry or suffering or struggling is not inherently in and of itself, you know, terrible. So what we do when we fast and we feel that pang of hunger or we feel that uncomfortableness, there are opportunities right then and right there. When you feel that hunger pang, you pray to God. The time that you would be preparing, cooking, eating, and cleaning from a meal, take that time to pray and worship God. Maybe it's a health struggle. Maybe it's somebody in your life that is hurting. Maybe it's a decision that you as a family have to make and you're not sure how to discern it. Don't miss out on the ability, on this opportunity that God has given us. Fasting is exceptionally valuable in the life of a Christian. Now, how do you do this practically? Well, some people will go away on a retreat. You can go away on guided retreats. Sometimes people will do it as a group. Sometimes people will, you know, just step away privately, take a day off from work maybe. Sometimes people will do it in the normal routine and rhythm of their day. Nobody really knows. Sometimes couples will do it together. Sometimes one person will do it. Sometimes a community group can do it together. You can start by skipping like a breakfast if you always eat breakfast. You can't cheat the process. So if you're like, oh, I do intermittent fasting every day till 3 p.m., oh, apparently I'm super spiritual. That's not how it goes. You may need to look at some other options there. But there is tremendous need and ways that you can fast. You can be creative. You can experiment with it. But take the time and the physical discomfort that you feel and let that push your heart closer to God. Now, we've talked about feasting for the glory of God, which involves that gratitude in our hearts and that being gathered together to celebrate and enjoy one another. We've talked about fasting for the glory of God. Now let's apply that together. Let's get really, really practical. This series is called Habits to Help You Grow. Habits, practices, routines. Let's get practical so that you don't walk away with kind of the fuzzies. How are you going to feast for God's glory? Okay, let me give you an application point for that one. Feast for God's glory by opening your heart, then your home, and then your ears. Okay? You can apply this by opening your heart, then your home, and then your ears. The first step is motivation, your heart. And maybe you're like, I don't like having people in my home. I don't like the chaos that may bring or the stress that, you know, that may bring. Open your heart. God is gracious and generous with you. Be gracious and generous with others. Open your heart. Be moved and shaped by the gospel. Let that motivate you to be hospitable, to feast well. Then open your home. Open your home. You know, a way that you can do this simply is to give away or to open your home two times a month. Two suppers each month. Once for people from the church and once for people outside the church. Just get very simple, very practical. You know, figure out a calendar. Figure out a rotation. Maybe there's a night of the week that seems to kind of work. Then every second week, plan, figure out your specialty dish. If it's new people each time, you can just make the same thing. Don't just reheat it, because that's not really, you know, the point of it, but you can make the same thing. Don't overthink it. It's more important that you open your heart and then open your home. And then when you have people in your home, open your ears just to get to know them. Ask them questions. Questions about their upbringing, about their dreams, what it is that motivates them, their hobbies. Open your heart, open your home, and open your ears. Do that twice a month. You know, here at Summerside, you know, we have all these systems and processes for connecting new people and so forth. And we have mugs. And if you're new, make sure you grab one. And inside some promotional material. And we have a software program that we use that helps us track with new people. That's all great. But I would trade all of it in to have our people master the crock pot for Sunday afternoon lunch. Right? There is nothing that can compete with hospitality and making people feel welcome. That makes sense. Even here at Summerside, my wife and I drove by this church and thought, hey, let's go visit that sometime. You know, maybe that'll be the church that we call home. So we attended here for about a year before I was brought on staff. And in the early years, the early first few weeks that we were here, we got invited into some people's home. And that transforms everything about a relationship. You have no idea. And I don't care about how good of a cook you are. I don't care about how nice your home is. I don't care about, you know, how impressive your family is or the spread. Inviting people into your home and being a generous and gracious host and opening your ears is a beautiful act that I have no doubt that God will honor and use. We're almost out of those mugs. We're going to order some more. We're going to keep at it. But can never compete with the crock pot. Open your heart, open your home, and then open your ears. Okay? Feast for the glory of God. Let's talk about fasting. Let me apply that. Well, here's a really profound application point for fasting. Okay? See if you can track with me. Fast for God's glory by actually just doing it. Just do it. Just do it. Right? Unless you're brand new to Christianity, right? You know about fasting. Fasting's very popular because, you know, intermittent fasting for health benefits and so forth. Fasting is something we all know about, but it's something that's not practiced very often. So apply this biblical principle, this command from Christ, by actually doing it. Look at your calendar, pick a day, and try. Start with skipping breakfast. You know, obviously all the medical disclaimers, talk to your doctor if you're in poor health and, you know, if you're diabetic, that's going to be a struggle and so forth and everything like that. I do recognize all of that. Take your health seriously. But at some point, open the door to God's Spirit, for God's Spirit to move by actually just doing this. Talk to your spouse, talk to your community group. What would this look like in your life? What would this look like with your type of work, with your type of routine? Is there something that you should be fasting about? Apply this biblical principle by actually just doing it and waiting on God to move. Now let me bring this back to Jesus. Because at Summerside, we're never done until we focus our hearts on Him. You know, if you love Jesus and if you have been saved, if you have been born again through placing your faith and your trust in Jesus alone for your eternal salvation, if you are following Jesus, I want to speak to you for a minute. Do you recognize that even now, Jesus Himself is preparing a feast for you? He's getting it all ready. He's laying out the table. He's going to cook. He's going to clean. And He's going to play host. And He has a seat for you And when the day comes, he's going to pull that seed out and invite you to have a meal with him. In Revelation chapter 19, the writer says this, speaking about that glorious and beautiful day. Let us rejoice and be glad and give the glory to God, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and the bride, that is his followers, that is Christians, have made themselves ready. Blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb. Jesus is preparing a feast, a party, and he is looking forward to that day when you sit with him. When we all sit there, and he can play host. It's amazing that not only is he preparing this meal, this incredible feast, the culmination of human history and the beginning of new creation. What's fascinating is not only is he preparing it, but he is actually and truly looking forward to having you there. I mean, think about that. How often have you invited people over to supper? Invited people over to a meal and you're kind of like, all right, let's just get this done. Right? Let's just get through this. That's not Jesus. He is looking forward to having you there. In John 17, Jesus himself prays this about his followers. He says in prayer to his Father, I want those that you have given to me. I want them to be with me where I am and to see my glory. Jesus is looking forward to having you over for supper. I mean, that is profoundly humbling. That you and that me, with all of our sin and all of our failure and all of our shortcomings, with all the ways that we have failed and failed to honor him as king, because of his crucifixion and his resurrection, he has a seat for you. And he's excited to have you for dinner. So what this means in the meantime is that we feast for the glory of God. As an echo or as a shadow, pointing our hearts and one another to that great day when we celebrate that with him. Feast for the glory of God. And we fast for the glory of God. To prepare our hearts, our spirits to know him, to adore him, to worship him in a greater and deeper way so that our lives are shaped by that vision of the future, of being with him, is shaped by eternity. Instead of being shaped by the temporal. So Summerside, let's feast for the glory of God. And let's fast for the glory of God until we all are united together around that table in the new creation, around our gracious, beautiful, and generous host. Let me pray. Father, I confess times that I have not opened my home and I've been selfish with my time or with my resources. I pray that you will help my heart to be more open so that I can open my home to open my ears. God, I confess times that I have fasted and not really done it with a truly spiritual focus. I pray that you will work in my heart. And God, for my brothers and sisters here, would we be a hospitable people who know how to feast well, who are grateful for the big and the small, who are grateful for the food and the fellowship, the friendships, the laughter, the joy that you have provided to us. Would we be a people who gather together around a meal, that are opening our homes, that are getting to know people, that are generous? And Father, would you help us to be a people who fast well? This overlooked discipline is an invitation for your people to know you deeper, to help discern your will, to mold our desires and our wills more into yours. Would we be a church that fasts regularly and well? We want to feast for your glory. We want to fast for your glory. And we desperately long for the day when we will be with you in eternity. in your kingdom that you have made new. And we sit around that table where we see you, Jesus, face to face. We look forward to that day. Help us to live in light of it. We praise you and we worship you, Jesus, that you are so gracious, so generous, and such a terrific host. We ask this all in your name. Amen.